Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Anne, who is here to speak with us about her experience of practicing with the Musings articles. Welcome, Anne.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for doing this week after week. It's a wonderful service.
Fun.
So a wonderful fun service.
A wonderful fun service. Exactly. Exactly. You know, and actually that's kind of right on topic, because I was just looking at the music articles that come out every month. And I think, I forget what context it was in. I think it must have been on the morning radio show recently, where Sherry was talking a little bit about that with Ashwini and that place of the process of writing them. And I project there's a great service in that and a receiving from writing them. And we just thought it would be so fun to talk about practicing with them, because there's so much in them, and because there's so much else that goes on in practice, we don't often get to stop and kind of look at what we see in those articles as they come out every month.
Well, that's very true. There is a lot going. There's so much that's going on in practice, and so many offerings that. Yeah, I was really thrilled when we ended up having the musings from last year, as the focus for our sitting groups every month.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I was just so happy, because I feel like each one is so jam-packed with goodies.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're giving a huge bag of goodies, and by the time we just barely opened it, and, well, here's another one.
That is such a good because it is. It's so beautifully woven together, isn't it? Each one.
Right, and you think about just the musings as a bag of goodies, and you've barely opened it, and here's another one. But then you add, you know, reflective listening buddies, and then you add tweets, and then you add the year-long. It's like, oh, my God. It's
right.
Like, what did they say? A plethora of riches?
Yeah.
Plethora of riches.
It is. And, you know, that's where the surfboard image comes in, right? Because, at least for me, conditioning actually would want to make that. Someone was just talking about that on the radio show this morning.
Yes.
Make abundance into a process of suffering, right? But that's where we just get the surfboard out and go, wow!
Yes. And I've just so appreciated being able to, I mean, not that we can't do this on our own. Yeah, I was going to say being able to sit with the musing article and look at it all month. I mean, obviously we can do that on our own, but there's something so special about being able to read it, in my case, read it aloud in group every week, and just hear it in a different way each week. And it's just amazing to me how something, it's like a completely different conversation each week. I was thinking about that quote, which, forgive me, I don't know who it is, but if we lose the spirit of repetition, our practice will be lost. Because here we are with the quote-unquote same thing every week, but I find it to be a completely different thing each week. It's like, wow, I hadn't seen that. Or this particular sentence stands out for me in a way, basically, probably because of what's going on with me that week, or who knows what, that I just see it in a different way and am able to go so much deeper with it, being able to sit with it and work with it for a month.
So, Anne, are you saying that in the sitting group, you're using a musings article for 4 weeks in a row?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Like, maybe some people don't know that. So, yeah, we have the musing article as our practice focus, as our topic of discussion for our sitting group for the month. So at the beginning of the month, the one musing article, usually the musing article that was written last year in that month, is sent out to the sitting group for everybody to read and record and sit with. And then at the beginning of each, every week we have a sit for the sitting group. And at the beginning of the sit, at the end of the sit, sorry, we sit for half an hour. And then as we're still facing the wall in the mind of meditation, that musing article is read. So we're able to receive it as we're sitting there. And in my experience, each time it's a completely different experience, or there's something new in it, maybe is a better way to say it. And then yeah. That is the springboard for our discussion for our sitting group.
It's so lovely. And, you know, relatively speaking to the number of people who are listening to the show and participate in Sangha, there's not that many folks who get to participate with it in that way. So it just, as you're talking, it's inspiring me to take on that. I mean, that could be a practice, you know, printing out the meetings article and then reading it once a week until the next one comes out. I love it.
Yeah, and I've actually I don't do this all the time, but I will record the musing article and then listen to it. So people who don't have a sitting group, if they want to have the experience of not only reading it themselves, but, you know, obviously, as we know, hopefully that there's a different experience in hearing it rather
sure.
than just reading it silently. Because in my experience, I hear different things. And then I love at the end, for people who don't know, at the end there's a practice focus. And like just this month is practice responding with interest and curiosity instead of identification when you next encounter a quote-unquote other. I mean, my heavens, there's a lifetime of practice just in that one sentence.
Oh, no kidding. I mean, in other words, that one practice could completely transform your life.
Yes, yes. And like you said, ego would want to take this and go be completely overwhelmed by it because there's so much. And it's just what is there to practice with right now? And, you know, in the sitting group, it's the musing article. And they're just so rich and so deep. And you can just, for me, I just feel the care and the attention and the compassion that was invested in writing it. And so it just feels like, I feel like it's fertilizer for the soul.
Yeah. And can you tell me that assignment again? I can't remember how it was worded, the one that you just
yes,
said.
Yes, I would be happy to read it. It's for this month. And, just so people don't know, there's about two pages of discussion. And then at the end, there's a practice. And I'm always so taken aback at how apropos it is. And this month is practice responding with interest and curiosity instead of identification when you next encounter an, quote, other, unquote.
Thank you. And that's funny because exactly what you just said was the reason I wanted you to read it again, because I just really saw in you saying that what I think is one of the things that's so powerful about the articles is that by the time you get to that practice, what we've been walked through for me is a beautifully articulated example of how you got to that practice. So you could say that practice, and that's one thing. You know, hey, here's an idea. Let's practice with this. You know, that could be a people, or that could be a, you know, whatever. And we would get something from it. But what it feels like the Musings article does is it puts a practice in a very concrete context. And so by the time I've read the article and I get down to that context, I can feel that possibility. I can actually feel, does that make sense? You know, I can feel access to that. Yeah.
Yes, you have a sense of what it means. Rather, I don't know if this is what you're pointing at, but rather than it being some theoretical idea that would be not, oh, that sounds nice, you've actually had examples and concrete examples that you can relate to and make sense in your life. So then when that practice is introduced, you're like, oh, yeah, that kind of weaves what's been talked about and discussed in the article. It gives it a focus, a lens.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Yeah, that's
beautiful. It occurred to me, Jen, to just say these are available on the website, right, for people if they aren't part of a sitting group?
Yep.
So I know people who are in a sitting group get it sent out to them at the beginning of the month as something to focus on. But for people who aren't in the sitting group, they can go to the website, right? And just they could pick one, like we're doing, pick the musing article from last year for this month and practice with it.
Yeah, or this year.
Or this year, exactly. Yeah, there. Pick one.
Yeah, exactly. So, Anne, I cannot believe it, but we're actually at the top of the hour. So before we turn it over to Michael, was there anything else in particular you wanted to add in about it?
No, I just did express extreme deep gratitude for this particular practice opportunity, because it's just so wonderful.
Yeah, much agreed. And thank you to you for being with us this afternoon to talk about it.
Oh, thank you, Jen. It was a pleasure.
All right. Take care, Anne. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Anne. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
Good. Really good.
Great. I enjoyed that conversation a lot.
Me too. I enjoy musings a lot.
Yes, I'm sure. And I was reflecting on the value of not just reading it with my eyes, but hearing it read also, and taking information in lots of different ways, using all different senses. Seems really valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The whole encouragement from practice to record, to listen, to read, you know, all of those ways in which awareness receives information. It's all training.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. I have announcements here, unless you'd like to start us in a different direction first.
No, go for it. Thank you.
Okay, great. Sherry will be offering individual guidance in the afternoon of July 28th and 29th at Center in the Bay Area. To register, go to center.livingcompassion.org/schedule.
Hey, Michael, I can hear a lot of static on the line. I don't know if it's me or you, but it's gone. Just FYI.
Yes, I heard some footsteps there. I didn't know where that's coming from. I'll watch my console here to see if anything comes up.
All right, sorry to interrupt. So center guidance appointments with Sherry.
Yes, exactly. And a couple of slots have opened up in the powerful There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat. That is July 28th to August 4th. This foundational work in going beyond self-hate is challenging, joyous, scary, and loving, and among the most important work you will ever do. And I think I found the source of the noise, Ashwini, so that's good.
Okay.
New group coaching offerings in August will provide support around two important topics: conscious compassionate action and mornings with the mentor, both beginning August 8th. Weekly group calls and email check-ins are part of these powerful coaching opportunities. Take a courageous dive into emotions you've never been allowed truly to examine at the When You're Falling Dive retreat, guided by Sherry and you, Ashwini, in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. This retreat runs from September 1st through 6th and includes yoga, delicious vegetarian meals, and individual guidance with Sherry. And for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Ashwini today, you can press *6 and then 1 to make guest show. And a conversation that's about 5 minutes in length and focused on one topic is great. Okay, you ready, Ashwini?
Ready.
Okay, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hey, it's Anne from New York again.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm happy to be here.
Likewise.
Yes,
what's going on for you?
Let's see. Let me just breathe here. Okay. I have a friend who will sometimes say to me that if I could cut them some slack. And I often get confused about what that means. And I ask them, and they offer that they're doing a lot, and I need to kind of understand that and cut them some slack. I'm just needing some guidance, I guess, from you.
So let's see if I'm tracking, right? So there, you have a friend who often requests that you cut her or him some slack, and you've actually asked them what they mean by that, and their request is for you to understand that they're doing a lot, and that's it. And what you're looking at is you still actually don't know what you're doing or not doing that is generating their request.
Well, I guess they say that he says that I guess it's that he forgets what I've asked or whatnot that I'm.
So he says when he forgets something, he would want you to cut him some slack. So are you aware of what it is that you're doing that is generating that response from him? Do you have a sense of that?
Well, to me, it feels like I've just asked him to do something. Like a lot, and I feel my ego feels that I don't ask that much, but maybe I do. I don't know. That's a good question.
So you ask him to do something, and he basically asks you to cut him some slack, and you're left feeling kind of confused because you don't feel like you ask a lot. And so why are you receiving that response?
Well, even if I ask a lot, I don't know. I don't want to say a little or a lot. I guess that was an ego kind of thing. I guess that feels like an ego kind of thing. But I guess I just feel confused about when I ask for something, if you forget, I'm supposed to cut them some slack for forgetting, but I still guess I'm confused. I don't even really know why I'm calling in about that.
Well, let's try to work that out, right? Because it's such that itself is such a wonderful process to bring awareness to. So you're asking for something. That other person doesn't do what you're asking, and then when you follow up on it, their response is for you to cut them some slack. Okay, so please don't ask me, or I'm doing so much, and if I it's sort of defensive. Would you project?
Defensive? You kind of dropped out on that last sentence. Is that what
you
said?
The other person is being defensive. So please, I forgot. So okay, just cut me some slack. Because I'm doing so much. Is that what is going on?
I guess I feel that.
And where does that leave you, Anne? What do you feel when that happens for you?
Well, I guess my ego then jumps in and jumps to its usual, you shouldn't have asked. They're doing so much. Don't ask. But then... I have things to ask for, but I guess now that we're discussing it, is like I can ask, but just because I ask doesn't mean it's going to happen. That's all.
Well, yes, and something for you to look at, right? So let's just walk that through. So you ask because it arises for you to ask, and then when somebody gets defensive, the process you're noticing is the voices come in and say, well, you should not have asked. That you should not have asked. So that's not a valid behavior, and there's something wrong with you, and you should not have asked. And the good thing for you is to notice that that's going on, right? That there is a voice that comes in and says, "Well, it's all your fault. You should not have asked." Right?
So actually, in fact, I'm the one. My ego is the one that's getting defensive. and I'm projecting it perhaps upon the other person.
Possibly, but the point is it doesn't matter whether it's ego or not. It's just you're noticing that the voice is making it your fault. And then you can look to see, well, what do I feel, right? If if what's going on for me? What's my process? Is it my fault? Mm-hmm. I just asked, and that you're right, that perhaps I don't need to get defensive, or there's somebody who's disappointed or hurt or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I can be with whatever my experience is rather than be told by ego that I'm wrong and then make a decision about how I should be different or how I should not be and what my choices are. Right? Yeah, because what we get to see is how conditioned we are to be reactive to what someone else is saying or doing without just looking at our reaction and our response and watching the process of that. And if we let that go, what possibility is available to us in compassion? Right? As opposed to a rule, so I'm never going to ask again, or I'm always going to ask, or I'm only going to be around people who do what I ask them to do.
Right?
Or I'm not going to be around people who don't do what I'm going to ask them to do, or if I ask and they don't do what I ask them to do, I'm just going to be really upset with them and sulk, or all of those various ways in which we are taught to behave. But if you can be present in the situation because you've seen your process and be okay with the person who's hurt, the person who's disappointed, the person who's frustrated, and be all right with that, then another possibility is available for you, that it's not your fault that something happens, but you can be with whatever happens in compassion. And, you know, you could just say something to the extent, to be skillful, right, or facilitate that interaction to say, I'm sorry that you feel like I'm asking too much of you, but it was something I really wanted, and I'm a little bit disappointed that it didn't happen. And own your own experience.
Oh, that's really helpful, because then I see what the process. This is very enlightening. Yes, I see.
Yeah, no one needs to be excluded, right?
Excluded. Then I excluded. Well, yeah.
Then you are excluded, right?
And so
we make someone else feel bad. I mean, that's what the conversation does, make someone else feel bad or make us feel bad, rather than if I know what the process is and I'm not identified with that process, then there are options that are always compassionate for all.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Good show.
Well, you're welcome, welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. Go happy. I'm going
you
happy.
You too.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Anne.
Thanks for joining us, Anne. Ashwini, what struck me about that conversation is with practice, just going through the levels deeper and deeper. Mm-hmm. So here's the process or the content I see on the surface. Or as I look more at it and have it reflected back to me, I see the next level, and then I stay with it, and it just unravels itself. It's amazing.
Yes, and so that I think what you're saying, Michael, is if we bring inquiry and interest and curiosity to how it works, we just keep seeing more. Seeing what was unexamined and what's controlling us, and then get through to that place from which that is no longer controlling us, and we're free to be with what's arising.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, it's that we're so conditioned to be reactive rather than responsive. And what practice allows us to do is to pause long enough to see how we react, so that we can short circuit that into a place of arising or responsiveness.
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful. And we have another caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. This is Rochelle Brandon. Oh, this is Rochelle from Charlotte.
Hey, hey, Rochelle.
How are y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. It's been a lovely spring and summer here, and I think about Sherry a lot because when I walk in the Greenway, we've got so many cardinals around, and I know she loves cardinals. And
mm-hmm,
so I see
mm-hmm.
them, and it reminds me of her joy of seeing the cardinals.
Yeah, it's so that in itself is such a wonderful process of love, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. And it's just been beautiful. And they're bright red. You know, it's almost like they just hatched, and the kind of adolescent male cardinals are just all around here mm-hmm. in my house and around in the neighborhood in the Greenway. And we just had a lot of cardinals and a lot of bunnies this year, too. I mean, you know, I kind of like 8 bunnies in my yard. And they look like they just got out of the nest. And so they're all frisky and little tiny bunnies running around. And it's been a
lovely. I'll make sure to convey the cardinal intel to Sherry.
Oh, yeah. I've got to express appreciation to you because there was it was a while back, but you had said something about organizations are inherently egocentric conditioned because they are made and created by people who can be conditioned.
Uh-huh, yes.
yeah, which was so helpful when you said that. And it made me kind of relook at some things and my expectations with organizations and politics and things like that. And so I have been looking at not suffering. And
mm-hmm.
I've come to the conclusion, or part of it, kind of a rephrasing of what the Buddha said, is that we suffer because we cling to a past that never was or to a future that never will be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, let me reflect that, Rochelle, because it's so wise. We suffer because we cling to a past that never was and a future that will never be. Exactly so.
Exactly.
It's a different version of saying we suffer because we want it to be different than it is.
Exactly.
And is being the operative word because that's the only thing that is what is now.
Exactly. And it when I look at that, it's almost a radical acceptance of what is.
Yes.
Instead of being mm-hmm. unhappy because it's not like it used to be, or it's
mm-hmm.
not going toward the future that I'm insisting upon.
Yes. And it's true. I love the way you phrased it. It's our attachment to that. It's a double whammy because it never was that way before, and it never will be that way in the future. So all we're attached to is an idea that doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I've seen that on all kinds of levels. Organizations, corporations, politics, but I'm also seeing it on a personal level type of thing. People that I love dearly and I want so much for them.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of clinging to an expectation that this is how their future is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really painful. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And having to let that go
mm-hmm.
and accept mm-hmm. what is.
Yes. Yes.
Moment by moment, stage by stage type of thing. And so, you know, my parents are getting older and have a little bit of memory problems and things like that, and kind of wanting to cling to what was or want to fight against a future of them, you know, getting older and things changing. My niece is growing up, and she's adolescent, so she's developing and changing, and my hope for her to change in one direction, but she may change differently, and kind of letting go of that. And letting go is hard, but regardless of how hard it is, I'd rather do that than suffer with some illusion that I'm clinging to.
Oh, absolutely. It's just so remarkable for us to see clearly through the assumption of that we can actually control how it's going to be, right? Control how it was or how it's going to be, because that's what we do. And then once we recognize that, how hard it is to live that, because we're so conditioned to want it to be different. But to realize that your option is to cling to it and suffer, or to let go and not suffer, and to choose the letting go and not suffering, however hard that is as a choice.
Oh, yeah. Now, let me tell you, I've shed tears over some things that I've had to let go.
Say that again, Rochelle. I didn't hear you.
I said, you know, I have shed tears over things that I have had to let go.
Yeah.
And, you know, I now meditate twice a day, most days, you know, once a day, every day, but now I've bumped it up to twice a day, because there's, Lord knows, there's a lot to, there's a lot to let go of in the world in general.
Yes. I project what you're doing in the meditation, right, Rochelle, is coming to a stillness or a centered place within you, which allows you to encompass all of what happens that feels contradictory and hard and everything in a place that there's nothing wrong. There's actually a sense of awareness or context within which one can hold all the turbulence, which is not, you know, hold all the turbulence. There's a way in which it can't all be okay, however turbulent it is, when we meditate.
Yeah.
Because part of what I project is hard is in letting go the attachment, or letting go how we want it to be, is for us to confront what that means for us when we don't have control over it. So I don't know if this is relevant to the example you mentioned, but all the love that you feel, all of what you want to protect somebody from, all of what it means for you if you contemplate the changes that your parents are going to go through, how painful it is for your niece to experience some of the things in life, how painful it is for us to confront some of the evil in the world, it disturbs us. Right, the reason we have the attachment is that it prevents us from being present to our experience when we confront what is so. So we trade maybe pain for suffering, but we also assist ourselves to bring compassion into that place where compassion was not allowed previously, so that we can be with it how it is. And there's a tremendous transformation for us if we allow for that.
Ah, yeah, yes. So
sitting still in meditation is the crucible of that transformation, because there is a contemplative perspective that can hold all contradictions that cannot be held in a conditioned orientation.
That exactly, because and when I bumped up my meditation, I felt and saw this letting go of things. And yes, it's tearful and painful, but I would rather be authentic and be here for what is,
mm-hmm.
and be authentically, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
give up what
mm-hmm.
I think it should be or how it should be, and be present for what it really is. And
mm-hmm.
I think the increase in meditation has helped that.
It does.
Yeah.
Because it does require a different orientation, right? We have to settle into an orientation in which love is not equal to control. And love may equal loss.
Yeah.
And love and loss can coexist at an intensity that can endure without having to avoid that sensation, right?
Exactly.
And we don't have that unless we practice that place of disidentification where that nothing wrong, or how are we, the conscious, compassionate awareness, which is able to witness all of life's experiences, right? All the pain and all the ecstasy and all of the joy and all of the grief and all of it.
Yes. I have to tell you, I thank you for being able to articulate. Yes, that's what I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And I also appreciated talking about the musing articles, because again, I think it very clearly articulates things and clearly points to some practice areas, and so I'm just very grateful for this practice, for you, for the ability to articulate that, because sometimes it gets a bottleneck and I can't express it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is helpful, because that's what's going on the cushion, you know.
Yes, it is. It's a crucible of transformation, and sometimes when I look at it in this kind of situation where, you know, we're so conditioned to the opposition that it's really a shift in orientation for it to be an and not an or.
Yeah.
You know, as a place where it makes sense, and it is a transformation of orientation, and we have to invite it and we have to practice it, and there's a way in which stillness is sometimes the only way to contain the intensity of that.
Yeah.
Thank
you so much. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Rochelle. Thanks for calling in and attempting to clarify.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us, Rochelle. Ashwini, that was a fascinating conversation. And again, looking deeper and deeper. And I was appreciating that perspective of wanting to let go the attachments more than to stay in the suffering. It's amazing.
That's right. Or wanting to let go of the suffering and therefore willing for whatever needs to be surrendered as a result.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, really valuable. And I remember Sherry saying something along the lines of, it's sort of like a prayer of, you know, life, take all these attachments away from me. No matter how painful it is, I know
mm-hmm.
that it's better to be without them. And it's impressive.
Yeah. So, and we can know that life will, you know, because we won't let it go
yes.
without that.
Yes. And Ashwini, we're going to hear from our sponsor now, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller, Ashwini. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Vanessa in North Carolina.
Hey, Vanessa.
Hi. Let's see. Well, I didn't really have anything in particular that I was calling in about. One thing that I was just looking at today was around, or yesterday, or was around transitions.
Uh-huh.
And just how I feel like ego-centric karma conditioning wants, what I was looking at was the practice, what I was practicing with was listening to a recording that I made about sitting practice before I sit, and like why
mm-hmm.
I want to sit and all of that. And what I noticed was when I do that, my sitting meditation or being on the cushion, it's like a whole different experience. I guess I'm just more present or whatever. I'm really more there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking at how helpful that is to sort of stop one thing, prepare, and then do the next thing. And
uh-huh.
and then in sort of looking at that, what I saw was that, you know, ego is always looking for the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. I'm never actually doing what I'm doing. If I'm there, then I should have been, you know, either someplace else or, you know, and just looking at that transition and actually having a transition instead of just like careening from one thing to the other.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What, that's so useful as an insight, right? So you have a practice of listening to a recording before you sit, and you actually notice that you're more present in the sit if you've listened to the recording. And the insight is that the transition from whatever you were doing to sitting through this recording is a preparation and allowing of being present to the activity that you're commencing. And that's really the insight for the application, which is that if I'm listening to a conversation, I'm always not here for what I'm doing. I'm always already in the next thing to do. And so not only am I not here, I'm actually not present or preparing for the next thing. And so what a fabulous insight to apply, that I could be here for what I'm doing, then I can be here as I transition from what I'm doing to what I'm going to do, and then be there for what I'm going to do, which really translates into being here for everything.
Right.
But being conscious about what the conversation does, and then bringing awareness to transitions, which are concrete changes of attention, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right, yes, that concrete, like this is, yeah, like, oh, wait, I am moving to a new activity. It's like a bell can
yes.
go off. Like at the monastery, there's the bell, and it's like, oh, okay,
yes.
right, transition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I am completing this one, and I am moving on to the next one. So let me be present to the change rather than going unconscious between changes. And that's what we experience, the readiness between the two. That is, I'm actually here for the transition. How fun.
Yeah.
That's very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, and it just seemed like I just wanted recordings for everything.
Why not?
Right. And now I'm doing this, and and what I want to bring to this is this, and
Yeah, and it's not even a futuristic thing, right? Because when we talk about that, then we are in the present doing what we're talking about. I'm bringing this intention to how I move to this next thing, which means that I'm present to the fact that I'm bringing intention to the next thing and the next activity. And maybe we can't talk on the recorder while we're doing our next activity, but there it's in our conscious awareness, and we've assisted ourselves to bring it to conscious awareness while we're doing that activity.
Yeah.
It's interesting how a recording like you do before the sit sets us up for an expanded awareness, right? If we train ourselves in that process. In other words, I'm listening to a recording that says I'm sitting because I want to sit, and there's a way in which I can keep that attention on that intention throughout the sit. And that's what I'm training myself to do. So it's not that I listen to the recording and then I sit down, I sit and then I forget about the recording. My practice is to keep the attention on that intention throughout the sit. That's what I'm really training to do.
Right.
Because I've interrupted the fact that the attention is on a conversation about what I'm going to do next, which is where the attention tends to go if I haven't prepared for the attention to be here.
Right. So if I'm following, it's like, say, like off. Sometimes I'll wake up and I'll make a recording about my intention is to have my attention on, say, kindness and gratitude, like for the day, and so that's the same practice, is then to listen to that, and then that's what I'm practicing while I'm listening, and then as I move out in the day, I can keep practicing that. And I mean, I think that's
You could take it with you, and here's an example. For instance, so sometimes, let's just say you made a recording about paying attention to why you want to sit and you find that for about 10 minutes into the sit, your awareness is expanded and you feel that sense of your intention. And then when you finish the sit, you realize that somewhere in the middle of the sit, the intention was gone.
Right.
Then the next time I would train myself to sit and see how I can increase the time period within the sit that my attention is expanded, right? So let's say you're practicing with kindness and you realize that your intention to be kind lasts for the first 2 hours of your day. Then I might actually train myself to listen to a recording 2 hours after, 2 hours into my day, in order to reset my intention, because that is the way I'm supported to maintain that kindness orientation throughout the day. So for the first month, it might take 4 recordings at 2-hour intervals to keep that intention in conscious awareness. And after 30 days, it might take 2 recordings in order to keep my attention on conscious awareness throughout the day. And so we can actually train the awareness to stay expanded, and by noticing when the awareness collapses, right?
Yeah. So say it's in the sitting practice, say I notice at 10 minutes, what would you suggest?
Bring your attention back to your recording, what the recording said, right?
Uh-huh.
My intention is to, I'm sitting because I want to sit, back to the breath, right? There's a way in which now you've bridged the collapse of the awareness for a little longer.
I see. Yeah. Yeah, that's such a great suggestion, because you know what ego would do is that, you know, at the end of the 2 hours I wake up and like, oh wow, that wasn't kind or whatever, I've totally forgotten about that. It's like, oh, you messed up again, you know, instead of
yes.
like, aha, 2 hours.
Yep.
That I'm setting my timer and I'll listen to that thing again.
At so, 1 hour and 45 minutes. Now,
right, exactly, right. Just before, yeah.
Yes, that's and that's how we train, because all we're ever doing in awareness practice is either expanding the awareness or redirecting the attention to awareness. And so we could, whatever we do, if we do it in that context, there's a way in which we can train ourselves to have an expanded awareness for longer and longer periods of time.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vanessa. Right. It's so fun, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it really is. It is. It's it is really fun. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Was there more?
No, I think thank you.
Okay.
All
Take
right.
care.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Vanessa. Ashwini, I love that idea of training and expanding awareness and improving skills in a way that doesn't let conditioning keep score. So
yes.
It's just a really interesting idea of growing skills, really, in actuality. And yet there's not a sense of I'm doing better or I'm a better person now or without keeping score. It's really a paradox of Zen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No self-hate, nothing wrong.
Yes.
Nowhere to go, nowhere to get.
Yes.
And
yes.
yet there's a way in which our ability to be in life through just the two things we always practice with attention and awareness are
yes.
getting more skillful at. We are becoming more
yes.
skillful at.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's amazing. And we have another caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Catherine in North Carolina.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine. Hey. I'm here in Asheville, and we have a little bit of a delay here, so things we may be getting used to that. So, oh, okay. One second, let me put this on speaker. Can you all hear me?
Yes, loud and clear,
okay.
And without the echo, so we're good.
Great. So I'm really looking at dizziness, and this is something I've been looking at for a long time in my life. It's not unfamiliar. There's a lot that I've been looking at with scarcity and things like that, but I'm also just looking at the kind of the practical side of it and feeling a lot of stuckness, because it just seems like there's always so much more to do than I possibly can. And this goes beyond just like to-do lists. That's true. That's part of it. But a big part of it is also like social engagement and like being a part of my community and the lives of my friends and my family. And I often feel overwhelmed by that and really want to prioritize all the people who are important to me. But the kind of the bottom line is that there are almost there's too much. There's just not enough. And, like in one weekend, I'll have 5 people having birthday parties and I can't go to all of them without really wearing myself out. And sometimes it's literally not possible. So, yeah,
so let me see if I'm tracking. So you feel stuck around a process of overwhelm, and the way in which that overwhelm operates for you is this desire to be to be with or available to or prioritize all of these people and things that you care about, and yet there's also an awareness that if five people have a birthday party on a particular weekend, you're not able to go to all of them and take care of yourself.
Exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you said you've been looking at this for a while. What have you seen about it?
Well, I'm pretty clear that I have a lot of conditioned stories around scarcity, that there's not enough time, money, energy, things like that. But in this case, I think it's energy and time, especially.
Mm-hmm. So you're aware that it's a story, right? That's something that when you contemplate your day, you have all of these possible engagements, and then when you attempt to try to fit them all in, you're aware of voices telling you, well, you can't do all of you, there is not enough time and there is not enough energy to do all of them. And so you notice that. And then what happens?
There's like a freeze response for me. I just kind of get like tense in my body, and I kind of shut down in a way, because it's almost like circuiting, like, I don't know.
So there's a sort of feeling of paralysis, and there's a tenseness in your body, and it feels like there's nothing, you don't know what to do. So have you paid a lot of attention to that place? Do you know what you're hearing in terms of messages at that point?
I mean, I think I'm probably pretty clear on it in a lot of ways. You know, I think there's a lot of, I mean, the initial message that kind of comes up is like, but I want, like, I value all of these things or all of these people. And there's, I think kind of some, there's like anger at life. It's like, why isn't there enough? And also why on the other end of it, kind of like, why is there so much coming at me right now? You know, like, it's like being angry that I have so many wonderful opportunities.
Yes. Well, and to pay that level of attention, Catherine, to be able to notice that those are the voices for you are so interesting. So there's a sense of why is there so much coming up at me? Why is there not enough? And what was the third thing you said? What did you say initially?
I'm trying to remember what it was. I'm not clear. I feel like that kind of that really.
Yeah. Why is there enough? And so there's resentment, right? There's resentment anger as the response, which is just interesting that there is this this conditioned reaction to, if the circumstances were, oh, I remember what you said. You love all these people.
Yeah.
You really care about all of these people, and you really want to be with them. And so there's a way in which that rising of love gets turned into anger at the very situation that, and that's the conditioned process, right? The collapse in the energy is because the love gets converted into resistance towards how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's an awareness that, I love all these people. And so let me ask you this. So, is there concern about being able to communicate that you might be able to do some of these things and not do some of the other things? Is there a sensation of dread or
there's definitely a lot of dread of like, oh my gosh, I'm going to let people down. I'm going to be letting people down.
And what that means about you, right? If I let people down, are they going to think that I don't love them, or there's something wrong with me that I'm not showing up for them, right? And so there's that other piece of it, which really is the reason There's the anger because there's no ability to express. There's no ability in the system to love and also to say that I love you and I cannot attend whatever it is that you're inviting me to and be all right, because those voices are going to come in and condemn you for having made that choice as being the wrong person, for not being able to manage all of your engagements. Because the real underlying message I project is you're not a loving person. If you were a loving enough person, then you could deal with all of this. And how you love and how you are judged as loving is showing up for everybody all the time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think part of that, I mean, most of the people who I know are either supportive of me taking care of myself or are, you know, silent about it. But there have been a few people who I care about a lot who express their displeasure with the situation.
Yes.
And I feel and that definitely makes it a lot harder.
Yes, because not only are you externally being told, so in other words, people can express their displeasure, and what that gets taken to mean is there's something wrong with you, right? Because it hits you at that place of the message that conditioning gives you also, which is if you loved me enough, you would prioritize me more, right? You should be able to do this. And so we're so conditioned in that conditioned system that we can't actually let another person have their experience and not take it personally.
I see
that, you know, you wish I could be there, and I really wish I could be there. I really, really love you, but it's not possible for me to be there. And so here's the suggestion to practice with that, Catherine, from that stuck place, which is to are you familiar with the two-handed recording?
Yeah, I do it a lot.
Yeah, and to really talk to see how you can assist that person who gets stuck in that place, in all of those places, actually, where someone is displeased, where you feel paralyzed and don't know what to do, and see if you can get in touch with what's really going on for you, the messages that are really being delivered to you, why is it that you suffer as a consequence of those messages, and just support that person. Really listen to what's going on for her.
Yeah.
As a first step.
Yeah.
Because
that's
she's
great.
Stuck
that's...
in there listening to all of those messages, not being able to know what to do, not being able to say what she says or deal with what people say to her, because it all is confused in that system of messages that mean there's something wrong with her, that she's not loving enough, or she's not the right person.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, call back and let us know what you what you discover. Yeah?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine.
All right. You two have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. And Ashwini, I think we have time for one more caller here.
Excellent.
Okay, here we go. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini and Michael. This is Carol from Washington.
Hi, Carol.
And I'm listening with great interest to this program. And let's see, what do I want to say? When I first took the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat a bunch of years ago, one thing that occurred to me was that I or ego was trying to manage other people's perception of me. So I noticed that for the first time. And now I feel like, what's happening is I'm learning new things about it. And one of the things is, I had some people stay at my house and when I was gone, and they gave me a gift. And so the temptation was to say, oh, no, you didn't need to do that. You didn't need to give me a gift. I gave it freely. And then they would know the kind of person I was, that I wasn't the kind of person that expected anything. And so I thought, I don't want to get into that at all. And so I just said, thank you. It was so simple. Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Well, that's such a wonderful process to notice, right? So the content is that you let someone stay in your house and they left you a gift. And the conditioned process would be to try to give the gift back because you're not the sort. It was more important to establish the sort of person you are than to just be able to be open and receive this gift. In other words, it was making it about itself, right? That was the process of ego making it about itself, or making it about me, as we say in practice, and to just be able to let go of the generosity of the other person, and you could give the gift of letting someone else be generous. We never get to do that, you know? That's the mutual giving and receiving of truly being generous.
Right, yes. I've been learning that. And the other incident like this that happened was I had an appointment with a doctor, and so in the course of that appointment, I was thinking about it ahead of time and thinking, your ego was thinking about saying, oh, yeah, I read this on the Internet. But if I said I read it on the Internet, I want to say it in some kind of tone so that the doctor knows that I'm not the kind of person that believes everything I read on the Internet. And so I was able to see that happening, you know, and this is all happening in my head because it didn't actually happen. But I thought I could just say, I read it on the Internet, like that, you know, with no story, no wrapping it in anything, not trying to get the doctor to agree with me about those people that believe everything on the Internet. So it's just kind of just seeing this simplicity and clearer communication. And it's just, so it's just the noticing and then the not saying. You know, to choose your words carefully, I guess, so long.
Yeah, it's such a practice of restraint and religious observances, right? The conditioned the conditioned orientation to rationalize, justify, explain, work out, make sure, as you said, manage people's impressions of us, as if we could do that anyway.
you know, and to
be able to watch that process of how tension and pressure and expectation and assumption get created around who I am, to let that all go and just be from that clear and simple place, just offer information. I don't need, and I project, Carol, that's why it's such a relief for us and for anyone else interacting with us. It's because we don't come from a place of neediness, right? I don't need anything from you. I don't need you to believe I'm a certain sort of person. I don't need you to take care of me. I don't need you to, here's just, I'm coming from a place of center. Here's the information I have. Let's have a conversation that doesn't have anything else put on top of it.
Right. Yeah. It does seem simple, and it does seem like a gift too, you know, to be able to be clear and not have all those ego trappings to sort through before you can even begin the conversation.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the gift that you bring to an interaction, which is, I've worked through all of my various ego machinations, and so I'm aware of them, and I'm not going to come from there, and so I'm coming from this place of presence. It is such a gift.
Yeah, I'm really appreciating this, you know, that I noticed it the years ago when I took the first retreat, and now, you know, it's coming to fruition, or at this, so it's really cool.
And that's the way practice goes, right? We have an insight, we keep paying attention, we actually see how the process works, and then we practice not getting identified with it, and then mm-hmm. be able to come from a different place. And what you said was so powerful. It doesn't change what you say necessarily, but it does, as in the case with the doctor. You did say that there was that you read something on the internet, but it wasn't mm-hmm. from the same place. So the how changed, mm-hmm. right? The what doesn't have to change, but the how changed.
Right. Yeah, and that letting go of control. You know, I'm just saying this. You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah. you could even say, "I'm just saying this," and because mm-hmm. we don't have any attachment to what we need in response or reaction or any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah. What fun.
Yes, it is.
For ourselves, more than anything else, right? Because we are taken out of the pressure of, oh, my God, what am I going to have to say? And how am I going to have to be? And what am I going to have to do? And I guess that wrong. And, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Oh, gosh is the right expression.
I'm very grateful for practice and for everything I'm learning and for Sangha and life in general.
Yes, yeah. And once we get to gratitude, I guess, Carol, we just can include everything, right? Bodhi, Dharma, Sangha, and life and everything in it.
Yes.
And what to end the show on.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Carol.
Okay, take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Carol. Ashwini, during that conversation, which I really enjoyed, I was reflecting on how really I'm a bit player in everybody else's life, and I'm so wrapped up about me and what people think of me, and nobody even sees me. So it's a complete waste of energy. It's really entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah, that our ego is always the center of the universe.
Yes, yes. Mm. And I'm so grateful that you joined us tonight. I really enjoyed it, and I appreciate your presence and your offer, and it's wonderful.
Thanks, Michael, and thank you for being here, too. And thank you for everyone being here. We're all happy to be here.
Yes, yes, we are. All right. Good night.
Take care, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye.